The following program is brought to you by the National Indigenous Ear Health Campaign, an Australian government initiative. The views expressed in this program are not necessarily the views of the Australian government.
Imagine trying to learn in a classroom where your hearing comes and goes. That may be a typical scenario for a child who has otitis media or middle ear infection. Otitis media affects too many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children, sometimes up to 90% of children in rural and remote communities. Untreated ear infections can lead to hearing loss, which can affect a child's ability to learn, speak, and understand language. A child with hearing loss may be disruptive in the classroom, feel less inclined to interact with others, and may have poor school attendance. Tackling otitis media in the classroom is the role of Whitney Tatton and Ida Savage at the Southern Queensland Ear Health Program. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Karen.
Hi. Firstly, to you, Whitney, your mob, your country.
From Boat, is it? Mananjali tribe.
And what about you, Ida?
I'm a Torres Strait Islander born and raised in Townsville, and both my parents are from the Torres Strait, Moa Island and York Island.
Pleased to meet you both. Thank you for coming on to Let's Talk today. You're here talking about the Southern Queensland Ear Health Program and about your respective roles. Can you tell us what the Southern Queensland Ear Health Program is?
We're a community-based service under Queensland Health that's based at Logan Central, and we provide ear health screening and speech pathologist screening for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children.
And how long have you been there?
I've been there for a year now.
Okay. What about you, Ida? How long have you been with the team?
I've just currently come in. It's been a year too as well.
Why did you want to work in this particular field, Ida?
Well, I found that working within the hearing health area, it will help like my people's children to have a good education at school, and focusing on the hearing health, it's one big area where this problem is.
What about you, Whitney?
I've always wanted to work in health, and I've been working in health for 7 years now in different specialised areas, and I just thought hearing health would be a really good one to get some more skills and learn more about ears as well.
Well, both of you are advanced Indigenous hearing health workers. What does that entail? Can you describe your role?
We both provide a service to different areas in the Brisbane region, and we provide hearing health screening to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children from 3.5 to 12 years in the schools.
What schools do you cover then, firstly, Whitney, and then I'll throw it over to you, Ida?
We cover a huge area, so any schools in the Logan Bow Desert area, and I also travel out to the southwest and provide services to Roma, Charleville, Cunnamulla and St George.
What about you, Ida?
Yeah, I focus on the QE2, the south side area, and I do about 19 schools, plus two kindergarten, Wandara and Gundamira. And I also have a clinic at Anala Indigenous Health.
All right, so you're both at schools probably every day?
Yeah.
Would that be correct?
That's right.
And I also provide a hearing health clinic from Aches, Mum and Bubs at Woodridge every second Thursday.
Describe the hearing test. What's the process?
Well, we do three tests. The first test is with the otoscope, which we look into the ear and see if the eardrum looks nice and deadly. The second one is the timp monitors. That looks at, tests the inner, the middle ear. And the third one is the audiometry, which is the sound in different levels.
Does it hurt, this process?
No, we try to make it fun, so then that's kind of ease the children not to be scared of these tests, because if you make them comfortable, they know for next time when we do the testing again.
And what happens if you do find there is a problem with if a child has sick ears?
We would refer to the doctor for further treatment, and then if they needed to be referred on from then the doctor could do that. But in saying that, like if we're looking in the ears and we find something that's abnormal, then we don't perform the other tests because then that could damage the ear more.
Why do you target schools specifically? I mean, isn't that kind of like a parent's job to make sure that their kids' ears are fine and just taking them to a regular clinic, doctor, that sort of thing?
I think we would probably get better attendance in school. That way we can target the kids while they're there. I think There's a lot of issues, you know, with transport and being able to get to the doctors and lack of services, especially like in remote areas and stuff like that. So I think targeting them at the school is really good.
What usually happens when you do go into the school? Is it just a set time? Right, you'll see all the prep school students right up to year seven. How does it usually work in the school environment?
Yeah, we usually talk to the principal or the teacher, support teachers, and usually they do let us know if there's any concern with the children on any levels. And but mostly we saw focus on the early years, which is prep, grade ones and grade threes, and then grade sevens, because that's when they go to grade eight, and then we don't see them in the high school.
So you'll see the youngsters, and then the ones before they go to high school.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's usually just once a year, or do you do two visits a year or something like that at each school?
It works out to be two visits a year because you have your initial screening first and then you go back for reviews 3 months.
All right.
Yeah.
Can you describe some of the signs of otitis media? What kind of symptoms or behaviour that a child may be displaying in the classroom that is an indication of otitis media?
They could have difficulty understanding the teacher. They could be pulling at their ears. There could be fluid. Sometimes there's fluid that just comes like dripping out of the ear. They could be disfocused from the class, behavioural problems.
And these are the sort of issues that a principal or the support teachers might indicate to you when you go into the school.
That's correct.
That
yes.
Student A has been acting up a bit, and we think there might be something going on with their ears.
Yeah. So, and then it's good too, because then we can get in there and stop it from furthering on into something that's serious, and then will cost the parents more. So by doing it, there being a free service out to the school and either in the clinic, that's where we try to tackle those infections from happening.
How long does an infection take to clear up? And does it always necessarily need medication, or do infections sometimes clear up themselves?
I think the whole reason for the 3 month period is to allow the antibiotics or whatever treatment they needed to work.
Certain kids do have a fast healing than others who have had continuous ear infection, which needs proper care, both from parents, from a health worker, and to a doctor or the specialist.
Are you sometimes seeing the same kids when you go into some schools?
Yeah, because we go there every year, we are seeing the same kids right up until grade seven. So. Mm.
Well, we talked about the ages, the grades and age group you screen. Mm-hmm. What about the parents? Do they need to give their prior consent for you to conduct a ear screening?
Yes, definitely, especially at school, because they're not present. When we do make those times to go to the school, a consent form is handed out or given to the kids to take home, and then they return it back to the school.
What about for that younger age group, the 0 to 5? How does the service, the program in Southern Queensland target that 0 to 5 age group?
I think our clinics would be the best. I think it's really important that all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids have a hearing test every year. And for the 0 to 4s, it would be good to see them in our clinics, obviously, because they're not in the schools, but they can come in and depending on their age, I suppose, and the maturity of the test, they could have a hearing test.
Yeah, because obviously just looking in the ear with the otoscope, and if you do the audiometry, they can't respond, particularly if their language skills haven't developed yet, to tell you, yes, I heard that or not.
Yeah. That's
right. Which do you prefer? Do you like the 0 to 4s, or do you like the older kids?
Well, we're not currently doing the 0 to 4, the 0 to 2, say,
yes,
as yet.
Okay. So there's nothing to compare it with, basically.
No, that's right. But I've worked in the child health, and to see that perform well, it does look a bit complicated, but then you have to be confident in doing that. Whereas for the 3 upwards, well, It's all fun and games. And for me personally, I enjoy doing that.
Yeah. I guess they're a little bit more cooperative too than a wriggling infant who might not want to stop still.
Oh, yeah. They're funny. And it depends on, like, the sound when you tell them to do hear the sound. And you have to make it up. It could be Dora, it could be Nemo the fish if you can hear it, or if it's awake. So by having them, it's all fun and games for them and makes them more relaxed. And then the next time when we do see them, then they go, oh, yes, I know what to do. So, yeah.
This is something maybe we can finish up with. Is there a particular story that you want to share where just one encounter, or it might be several encounters that you've had over time where you've seen a kid go from being one, having difficulty hearing, to doing so well in the classroom that they've just...
Well, we're working within the hearing health for 5.5 years and coming over to Logan area. I know at a school with all these students that I have tested for those 4 years that I've been there, and this year they've passed the hearing test. And now that just shows that, yes, something is being done within the school. For it to happen for that long and to have a school that I don't have to go back to do a review just shows that, credit goes out to the parents, credit goes to the school that make them for who they are now, and not having these infections. Oh, it makes you enjoy your job more, you know, because you're working with your own people. Mm. And for me, my heart goes out to these kids because they're our next generation, and this is what I want to do, and hopefully it helps them in the long run when they grow up and with their kids.
What gives you pleasure in your job, Whitney?
I think just feedback and comments from parents, because we also have, like, school health nurses that go out to the schools, but there's some families who would prefer to see us over the school health nurses, and I think it's just that cultural respect. So that always makes my day when somebody says that to me.
Now, otitis media can be prevented, can't it?
It sure can.
What are some tips that you want to share with us today?
Probably just encouraging kids to always regularly blow their nose, because the eustachian tube is connected from our nose to our ears, and keeping that clear all the time by blowing our nose will help prevent ear infections. It's always good to have your ears checked at least once a year, and keeping things out of your ears, like earbuds or any beads or anything, is always good.
Mm. Whitney Tatton and Ida Savage, Advanced Indigenous Hearing Health Workers at the Southern Queensland Ear Health Program. For more information about the program, you can call 3412 6029. That's 3412 6029. And if you want to learn more about the National Indigenous Ear Health Campaign, you can check out this website, careforkidsears.health.gov.au. That's careforkidsears.health.gov.au.
This interview is brought to you by the National Indigenous Ear Health Campaign, an Australian government initiative. The views expressed in this program are not necessarily the views of the Australian government.
Well, it is a Friday, and my name is Karen Durante, your regular host for Let's Talk on a Friday here on 98.9 FM and the National Indigenous Radio Service, also coming to you live off the web at 98.9fm.com.au. And we kind of had a different start to the day, didn't we? Got straight into it. I blame this cold that I have. I'm feeling a bit fuzzy today. But hopefully, as the day progresses, it'll clear up. But I do want to, if you allow me now, to acknowledge traditional owners of the land where Let's Talk is broadcast. I'd also like to pay my respects to our elders, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders and non-Indigenous elders. And welcome you, of course, to Let's Talk as well. Karen Durante with you, of course, for Let's Talk. And joining me now is Principal of the Cairns West State School in Far North Queensland, Michael Hansen. Welcome to Let's Talk.
How are you, Karen?
I'm well, thank you. Michael, congratulations on the 2012 Australian Government Minister's Award for Excellence in Teaching and Leadership in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Education. Quite a mouthful there. What essentially is this award?
Look, I mean, thank you very much for the congratulations. And before I talk about what the award is, can I just say that I'm a firm believer that any accolades that we as principals might get is on the hard work and dedication of the team, the teachers and teacher aides at our school, and that's certainly the case at Cairns West State School. So I actually feel quite humbled and obviously very proud to have won this award. Which in essence, I guess, is a recognition of the fact that at Cairns West State School, a school which does have a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander students attending, we've actually started to make some significant inroads in terms of lifting the academic performance of those students.
All right.
And I guess that the recognition is coming as a result of that.
All right. Well, tell us a bit about this school. You turned up there as the school principal about 5 years ago?
That's correct.
All right. And what was the academic levels at that stage?
Look, I mean, the academic levels were unacceptable. And when I say unacceptable, it's not acceptable to have students who turn up to school every day where mum and dad, you know, get their kids ready, send them to school, and then they come to school and they're not meeting the minimum standards. And this isn't about a blame game, because I know that the principal and the teachers who were here previous to whatever we've introduced worked absolutely hard to ensure that they did their best. But in 2008, our region came up with what it has called a regional service commitment, where basically what the region wants is for every single boy and girl to complete grade 12. And in completing grade 12, they need to have an OP score, a vocational education pathway, or paid employment. And for those students with a special need, a pathway that they can work towards and I guess be successful in. Now, we very quickly realised that if any of our students in the primary setting were going to be successful when they got to grade 12, we had to get it right at primary school, and we realised that we weren't getting it right. So we had to have the courage to do something different, which is what we then did.
What did you do?
So what we did was we hit upon what we call the academic success guarantee. And in essence, what that guarantee is that we say to mums and dads, you send your children to school 95% of the time, and then we will guarantee that your son or daughter will meet or beat the year level benchmarks. And if they don't, they'll be individually case managed until such a time as they do. So it really, you know, it's a bit like saying to the parents, look, you send your kids to school all the time, and now we're going to give you a stick, and please beat us with it if we're not meeting your expectations in terms of how your kids are performing. And it's remarkable how many parents, you know, were very excited about the fact that this guarantee was now being put into place. And even though in the first year we got up to 110 students signed up, that's increased over the last 3 or so years, and we now have 317 students signed up to the academic success guarantee. And what that means is that we have 317 students who are turning up 95% of the time, and we have 317 students who go home every day to a mum and a dad or carer who are connected with the school and who are engaging in their children's education. And I think that's a huge improvement.
All right. So what attendance levels were they pretty poor too when you joined 5 years ago? And was that and as a result or consequence of that, that's why literacy and numeracy levels might have been a bit, embarrassing.
Look, I mean, I think the attendance level were not good, but they weren't devastating. What we did was we had a look at the attendance records and then how kids were performing in class. And what we actually worked out was that students that were turning up between 70 and 80% of the time were in fact learning quicker and improving quicker than students who are turning up 90 to 100% of the time. And when we interrogated that information and that data, what we worked out was that those kids who turn up 70 to 80% of the time, they turn up often enough to have consistency of practice, but they're also away that one day a week or 1.5 days a week enough to be a little bit of a pain in the backside for the teachers. So the teachers would spend or put in a big effort to actually catch that child up to make sure that he or she, you know, caught back up to what the work that they'd missed out. And so really what we worked out was that what those children were seeking was that one-on-one attention with an adult in the classroom. So we thought, well, if we can lift the benchmark for where we then put our additional resources to kids who turn up even more of the time, then that will lift the overall attendance. And we have had quite a bit of success with that. So over the first 3 or 4 years, we had significant improvements in the attendance. But in that period of time, in the 3 years since we've introduced the Academic Success Guarantee, our school enrolment has also increased by over 200 students. So, you know, it's had a bit of an effect in a number of areas.
All right. Without naming any students, of course, can you give us some examples where, you know, a kid's performance has improved as a direct result of this?
Yes. If we have a look at 2008, prior to us introducing the Academic Success Guarantee, if we just look purely at grade one students and purely at a reading level, so a PM benchmark level, in that year we had 68 students in grade one. At the end of that year, we only had six of those who met the minimum standard for that PM benchmark. Now, could you imagine what that grade two class looked like the following year? Only six out of 68 students meeting the minimum standards, never mind aspirational targets that we have for our kids. Because of that whole mindset shift that we had with the staff and that firm belief that we now have that every single child can and will be successful, the following year, out of 70 or so students in grade one, 42 of those kids met the minimum standard. So, I mean, there was a 700% increase just in the first year. And obviously, as we get better at what we do, we start to see further and further increases in the performance. Even to the extent that in our NAPLAN results, we have students in grade 3, 5 and 7 who are performing well up in the top two bands, which, you know, never used to happen for students at this school. So really, you know, unless you have an absolute belief, and all of our staff at this school believe this, that our kids, all of our kids can and will be successful, then I think we are kidding ourselves in terms of rolling out an education program. So we must believe that first, and that's certainly never in question at our school. And the parents believe it too now, which is even better.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I mean, what was their level of involvement with the school prior to, you know, this program, if you like, and what is it now?
Look, I think there's always been really good engagement with the school, and we've always, like Cairns West is one of these schools that parents love to come into, and they always come in for the sporting activities. And on the first Friday of every school term, we have what we call a big breakfast, and mums and dads come in for that, and we all share breakfast together. And that's a bit hard when there's 600 kids and 200 parents, but nevertheless, that's what we do. So there's been that parental engagement there, but it's always been for the things that have been fun. It's been for the things that have been around sport or just, you know, the cultural aspects of it. And what we've shifted is the engagement also to now be about the academic performance of their kids and about how well they're achieving in school. And unfortunately, a lot of our mums and dads would have had a pretty negative experience in schools, and so for them it was really difficult to come up and have those conversations with the teachers about how their kids were going. So part of the Academic Success Guarantee is also a really strong connectedness a process that we have with the parents, where we are sort of working with, I guess, the mums and dads. So we're reaching out, I guess, to the mums and dads and helping them to reach back into to the school. And that has really seen some very strong partnerships being developed with the school and the parents. And in essence, the Academic Success Guarantee is a contract between the parents and the school. And the child can play up like a second-hand car dealer or second-hand car, I suppose, but can never be turfed off the Academic Success Guarantee as long as they maintain the 95% attendance. So the partnerships are there. And at the end of the day, I mean, we are accountable to the parents, aren't we?
Mm. You gave the example there of year one students.
Yes.
What about older students, those ones that now would have, you know, moved on to high school?
We're finding that more and more of our grade 7 students are now at a stage when they transition into high school that they're transitioning, as well as students who come from other schools. I mean, what we say is that we want our students to be strong and proud about who they are and what their identity is, and smart enough to mix it with any other child. And so we've got to admit that, and we do so proudly, that we have very much adopted the Chris Sarah Stronger, Smarter philosophy, and we're implementing that within our school, because it is about ensuring that our kids are really proud about who they are and who they are as a person and where they come from, but that they're also smart enough when they go to high school that they can mix it with all the other kids and compete to get into the best classes. Mm. And so we're seeing more and more students who are doing that. And just 2 days ago, our current grade sevens were at their local high schools up here in Cairns during the orientation day. And the feedback from them was one of excitement and can't wait to get there, whereas in previous years, they would go to the high school and they'd feel quite daunted about that task. So we also spend a lot of time preparing our kids at grade seven for that transition.
Oh, plus, you know, the other thing is they're going from being big fish in the sea to being little fish again.
Absolutely. Even though some of our kids are pretty big kids, we say to them, well, you're going to be the babies again, and so you need to get your head space in the right place when you go to high school. Look, we used to, and I guess we still do to some degree, send students over to high school who, you know, are just going to be totally lost when they get there. But the numbers of those kids who we're transitioning now have significantly declined. And I guess that there are other circumstances that those kids have in their lives as well, which would be the cause of why they won't transition well. So one of the things that we've also committed to doing, and which we start next year, is that we'll actually follow our grade sevens into high school, and we'll follow them also as they go into grade nine. So we're going to track and make sure that not only do they turn up, but that they maintain their enrolment all the way up to the time that they enter grade nine. Because the other thing that we know is that we have the connection and the relationship with the families, and the high schools are now having to start to develop those relationships. So it's a bit silly if we just shut the book on those kids and say they are now the responsibility of the high schools. So we need to ensure that that transition to high school is seamless. And if it's going to be seamless, it means that we need to work closely with the high schools to help them make those connections and have those relationships with those families.
Mm. I imagine that kind of happens at, in private schools where you do have the, you know, prep right up to year 12, or where, you know, the school is in the lives of the children who are, you know, do spend a fair bit of their time at a particular school.
Look, I don't know what happens in a primary school, but in a private school. But I mean, if you have a private school where students enrol in prep and then it's continuous all the way through to grade 12, of course that would happen. Mm. In the state system, we do have colleges which have that sort of an enrolment strategy as well. I guess one of the things that we're extremely keen to ensure in our setting is that we don't drop the ball on our kids when they leave Cairns West. We can't on one hand say to the students as they're going through school at our school that you're part of the Cairns West family, and then when you finish you're no longer part of the family and we just send you off to high school. I think if you use the term family when you're talking about the connectedness with the school, then that also then means that you have to follow them on as they move into high school. Yeah. I mean, if you have kids yourself, Karen, you know that you're not just going to send them off to university and then hope they sink or swim. You'll do whatever you need to ensure that they're successful. And I guess that's a philosophy that we have. Once they're a Cairns West student, and if they finish here at Cairns West, then we will ensure that we do whatever it takes to get them to enrol in a high school and make sure that they settle well in that high school. And if that means that we've got to work with the high schools to make some connections with families and provide other information that we may have on those kids, well, then we do that. Mm. So it really is a partnership. And again, it stems back to the regional service commitments. We can't expect kids to be able to navigate all the way through 12 or 13 years of schooling to get to a successful outcome unless we help them along the way. And if we start dropping the ball at various junctures throughout their schooling lives, well, that makes it a little bit more difficult for those students. And I think that school systems should be about enabling and not about disabling pathways for kids.
Mm. The graduating class of 2012, I don't know where seven came. Oh, I know, because I'm talking about year seven students.
Year seven, yes.
Yes. Where are they most likely to go? Which high schools?
Most of our kids, so we have 78 students who will transition at the end of this year to high school, and I would say maybe 60 to 65 of them will go to Trinity Bay State High School, mm-hmm. which is just down the road.
Yep.
And we have a really wonderful partnership with that school and with the leadership of that school. This Tuesday we had our annual presentation day, and the principal comes down and is the key presenter at that particular day. And the reason we do that is because we want our families to know who the principal of that school is before they actually get to that school. And Stephen Savakis, who's the principal down at Trinity Bay, is a very decent a person and is very, very good with ensuring that our kids transition well into that school.
Does he follow the Chris Sara philosophy when it comes to education?
That I don't know, but he certainly has some very good support structures in place. But I would suggest to you that, I mean, he would want exactly the same that we would want from our kids, which is that he wants them to be strong and proud, and he wants them to be smart enough to mix it. And I know for a fact that at Trinity Bay they have a very strong Indigenous leadership program. They have a strong NAIDOC program, and there are a lot of cultural activities that that occur in that school. Our PNC president, in fact, is Loriana Smith, who works at Trinity Bay State High School with the Indigenous kids to help them settle in. So, you know, there's a lot of links between, there are a lot of links between Trinity Bay and our school. And it needs to, those links need to be there as well.
You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM and the National Indigenous Radio Service. We're speaking with the principal of Cairns West State School in Far North Queensland, Michael Hansen. He picked up an award from the Australian government. It's an award for excellence in teaching or leadership in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander education. Really, they need to come up with a more simpler title, I think, for that particular award. Michael, stay with us here on Let's Talk. We'll be back with Michael in just a moment. Karen Durante with you, and I'm with school principal Michael Hansen. I wonder how many of you, when you hear school principal, you think about those times where you might have been called to the office? Anyway, Michael has actually picked up an award from the Australian government in leadership and teaching for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander education. Michael, I'm curious why you chose this particular profession.
It's interesting because I sort of, when I went through high school, I spent a lot of months not really knowing what I wanted to do. But I think we all, throughout our schooling lives, we have teachers that that when you sort of sit back and think about, you know, who really made a significant impression on you. And I had a number of teachers who did that. And I thought to myself, well, you know, I wouldn't mind being that sort of a person for someone else in the future. And I think that was really the initial thoughts I had. So that was certainly why I entered university and college in those days and started my teaching career. And then as, of course, you get into it, you realise what a powerful game it is and how much influence and impact you actually have on young people's lives and the ability that you have to change for the better outcomes for kids. And so I've just really enjoyed that part of the journey.
Where are you from? Are you from Far North Queensland?
No, I was born in Denmark, and my parents immigrated to Australia in 1982.
All right.
And we came to Brisbane, and I did my schooling in Brisbane after the initial 6 or 7 months learning to speak English.
Yeah.
Went then to Cooperoo State High School, and then from there on to Kelvin Grove to do Teachers College, where I thought in those days if I had to learn the language, I may as well become an English teacher. So that was what I ended up becoming, an English and German teacher. And then was placed up in Cairns. So I started my teaching career at Cairns State High School in 1990.
Had you had much interaction at all as a new Australian with the first Australians?
Not at all. And it was actually quite embarrassing how little I knew about it. And it was only really when I started work at Cairns State High School, which in those days had quite a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander students there, that I started to get some sort of an idea about I guess the plight of Indigenous people in Australia. And I actually felt quite embarrassed that I didn't know any more than I did, because I really didn't know anything.
Right. Well, I'd imagine that there was an induction pack for the family
You
first.
There was, but I mean, you can be inducted as much as you like.
Okay.
I mean, unless you take the time to sit down and really talk to people about things, and you know, it's just an induction program. And certainly, Cairns State High School in those days had a wonderful induction process, and one of the community education counsellors there. I guess, took us aside as beginning teachers and did spend a fair bit of time with us. And it's actually quite interesting. The lady I mentioned before, Loriana Smith, who is now the Parents and Citizens Association principal at Cairnsville State School, was actually a student of mine at Cairns High in my final year there. So it's quite interesting how those sorts of things occur. I think that my deep understanding of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander history really didn't start to occur until I was transferred to Kawanyama back in 1994, and then subsequently spent the next 14 years in those very remote Indigenous communities.
Yeah,
and I mean, you can't live and work in places like Kawanyama and Napranum and Marpoon and Dumaji without learning the history and the issues that are facing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today. Mm. Well, you probably can, but you'd be a pretty arrogant sort of a person if you did.
Mm. And did you find that your approach to teaching and then becoming a leader within the school system as well changed over that time with your, with your increased exposure, I suppose?
I think what it actually really refined for me was the fact that I need to have an absolute high expectation of my own standards and my own how I carry myself, but also a very high expectation of what the students in my class can achieve and will achieve. And I think prior to having those experiences, I might have been guilty of glazing over or teaching to the middle and not individualising my teaching style with those students in those classes. But I think it lifted the expectations that I knew I had to have for all students in my care when I was teaching. And certainly since becoming a principal, my mantra is about ensuring that we have very, very high expectations of what our kids can achieve. It's no good having low expectations and then reaching those expectations. I mean, wouldn't it be terrible if that was the case? We need to have very high expectations, and those expectations that we have for our kids now at Cairnsville State School are exactly the same that you'll find in any other school across the country. And I think that just needs to be part of the course. But I think in those early days, I probably didn't understand that all that well. But when you work with icons of education like Don Anderson, and then you have the privilege of spending time with people like Dr. Chris Sara and others who have worked in that field for many, many years, then, you know, you soon learn that, if you want to.
Do you think amongst the student population there that you've come across that there are some promising teachers in amongst that there might be?
I certainly hope so. I mean, one of my dreams is that one of the students that have come through Cairns West one of these days will come and tap me on the shoulder and say, well, that's it, Michael, you've had your turn. I've now been to university. I've done a few years' worth of teaching, and I now want to sit in your chair and be the principal of the school, and I really look forward to that day. We should really, all of us who teach, should be trying to work ourselves out of a job by empowering young people, regardless of who they are and where they come from.
We have some young people who listen to the Let's Talk every day through our registered training organisation. What advice would you have for them if they are considering a career in teaching?
Teaching is very, very hard work. There's a lot of hours that go into planning and preparing, but it is also one of the most noble professions because it is the one job where you can impact 25 or 28 lives every single day you turn up to work. So it's one of the most rewarding jobs that you could ever do. And the one thing that I have, which is just, I think a lot of my friends are jealous of, is that there's not a single day that I wake up and don't want to go to work. I get into work, and you don't need too many smiles from the kids that you see when you get in the school gate or the parents who are standing there having a yarn to you in the morning to know that, yep, this is the best job in the world. I wouldn't swap it for anything.
All right. Well, now everyone's going to leave the media and become a teacher. Thanks.
Well,
that'll
well,
keep me in a job then for a long time.
And look, I mean, the other reality is if there are any if there's any young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander young people out there listening to the program today, can I say this to you? We want Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander young people to consider teaching as a career. We want you to be teaching in our classrooms, and I really look forward to, hopefully in the very near future, meeting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander teachers in my school and welcoming you into our family.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us today. Congratulations on the award again, and I hope you guys have a fantastic 2013.
I certainly hope so too, and I would hope to say watch this space, because I'm sure that we'll come up with something that will improve again. And look, thank you very much, Karen, for the opportunity to talk to you today. It's been a real privilege. When I'm in Brisbane, I always turn my radio to your channel, and so it's been a real privilege and a big honour for me to talk to you on this program.
Thank you once again, Michael Hansen, the principal of Cairns West State School, wrapping up Let's Talk for today and for this week.